To sync this podcast to the episode, pause now and hit play right after the previously on. Hey everyone, welcome to the 310 podcast.
410.
Oh, sorry, I'm lost. The 410 podcast. I'm Matt Roberts, I think, executive producer and writer here for Outlander, and I'm here on the 410 podcast with
Luke Skelhaus, co-executive producer and writer of the episode.
The reason I'm so confused is that we've been working all day on season 5, Luke and I, and we come into my office at the end of the day to do the podcast. So here we are. You did write this. What was the what's the title of this one?
The title is The Deep Heart's Core, which is a line from a poem by William Butler Yeats called The Lake Isle of Innisfree that used to be in the episode but is no longer. So it's sort of a hanger-on.
A hanger-on. So we kind of let that title stay, even though I've been known as the butcher of titles. So anyway.
I think it still kind of works as a title.
There it is, The Deep Heart's Core.
It's taken from the last line of that poem,
right,
that used to be in the episode. Yeah.
I like the still, the actual working still. This thing works.
It's a beautiful thing that our art department did for us. Yeah. And it works. It runs. We haven't made whiskey on it yet, but
no, not yet. bad tasting water is what we make. We had, if I remember correctly, which I do, we had to, you originally, because you also produced this episode.
Yep.
So when we, a writer sometimes writes episodes, and when they go to Scotland, they actually get to produce their own. And
yep.
On this instance, you did.
I did, indeed. Yep. And I think where you're going, this scene and the next, which is an entire day's work, and two really important scenes. When we showed up to work, it was a blizzard. An hour before, it was not. The blizzard came in, and we had nothing else to shoot, and we powered through, and we shot this, and when you see what the next scene is, it's a big one,
yeah,
and it's an important one. And we shot it in a blizzard, and these guys did a fantastic job. We're troopers in that kind of weather.
And I think what happened is we were looking at the dailies, and dailies are the rushes that you get the very next day. And we noticed in the coverage that when you were on Jamie, he was in a blizzard. But then when you were on Brianna, it looked sunny.
Right.
Because it just looked like completely different days.
It was. It was after lunch. It cleared up a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel like the same moment.
Right. So yeah. We had to completely reshoot this entire day when we had better weather. And when we say we didn't have anything else to shoot. It's sometimes you're on a location where you can go, okay, we can't shoot this scene, but we can run inside and shoot this scene. But we were too far away from our studios.
Yep.
And we couldn't really manage that. So, but I think it worked out great. And Sam and Sophie brought so much on both days.
Yes.
Which is great because they literally had to do this two separate times.
Yep.
And there's some nuances that they added. They got to adjust the performances slightly.
Yep.
The second day, which I thought was great.
You
know, and we kind of added a little bit and took out a little bit after we saw it.
Yep. I mean, you don't want to say that the first instance was like a rehearsal, but I think you're right. But to have them do it and then do it again, even though we would never have planned it that way, I think worked out in our favor. I think they did a fantastic job.
They did. And then, I mean, once again, the lighting is just so much better in this one. It's consistent. But I thought that both the actors, when talking to them before we shot this, they both had some ideas about how they can, you know, adjust their performances, and that's what really helps out is that you get a second. Anytime you hindsight is 2020, so even in filming, you can do that.
Yep.
I love the scene. It's him. He's showing her. I mean, he's being, in a way, he's play acting. He's play acting.
Yes, he is. He's goading
Sam
her.
Had to act upon acting. So, yeah. You know, in the sense of Jamie had to act.
Yep.
And I like that he kind of goats her to teach her a lesson because she's just not listening.
Right.
You know?
And she's blaming herself. And she's thinking she could have done more and she could have fought off her attacker. So this moment, which is, you know, inspired by the source material, is, you know, it was a tricky moment for us to get right. And they choreographed this with a stunt coordinator. We rehearsed it to get this moment right, because he's struggling with her. He's fighting her, but he's trying to prove a point.
Yeah. And he has to be rough enough to make her understand that you there, and he says it there. And I love the turn there, is where he goes from this aggressive guy, this beast, and he turns and he becomes her father again real quick.
It's really a beautiful moment.
Yeah, it really is.
And she plays it so well, too, where it dawns on her. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That, hey, he's trying to teach me, you know, a lesson. And I like the comparisons of, you know, we've seen how she is with Frank.
Yep.
You know, we've seen that. And it, I think personally it's important to see that, because now you get the understanding of how Jamie is a completely different father. And I'm not saying he's you know, it's less or more, but he's definitely has his own style, and it works just as well. And sometimes, you know, even better, mm-hmm. you know, because he's just so, well, he has that blood bond too.
Yes.
And it's a different thing, I think.
Yep. And she turns it back on him here, which is interesting.
It is.
You didn't fight your attacker.
Yeah. But he has, you know, and he lets her know, I had to make a deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not your case, is that I had to make a deal to save your mother.
Yeah.
And I'd do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I like about Jamie Fraser is, and excuse my language here, he calls people on their shit. So you killed somebody before then, have you?
Yep.
And she's it's like, he's like, well, you know, what are you talking about? It's not that easy, you know? He just gets right to it. And,
and he does it out of love, you know?
I do think that, you know, one of the things we struggle with in time and adding things into the script is sometimes the things that fall out is that Jamie Fraser actually has a really great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in the cuts, those, you know, because we only have so much time to work with. But for me, that's the one thing that I miss a lot of the character. And sometimes, you know, when mm-hmm. we don't, because he uses humor as a defense mechanism to make people feel better.
Yeah.
You know, when he sees them struggling, he does these little, you know, he adds these little moments of humor, and it makes them feel better, more comfortable.
Yeah. It's nice when we can find those and put those in. Yeah.
But I think he did that there. He's like, so you've killed somebody before. You know, and the way he said it was like that, you know?
Yeah. Oy. Can't believe how much of a nicer day this is.
It really, you know, when we watched the dailies, I ran in there because it was the emergency button was thrown, and I ran into post, and I watched the assembly of this, and I was like, oh, we got to shoot it again.
Yeah, because I think I told you, and not only I, we all sort of said,
you said this is going to be rough, so I ran in and I saw it and made the call. I said, absolutely, we're shooting it again. There's no two ways about it.
Here we have some.
Now, people are going to read the script on those that go to the Star site and read the script. They're going to notice that this is not in order anymore.
Yeah. We this scene and the next actually came much, much later in the script. We weren't going to reveal Roger and see what he was going through until much later, until actually Brianna found out what had happened to him, which doesn't come until much later in the script. But I think, you know, when you start to watch it in post, you feel that something's missing.
Yeah.
Because you left the last episode with him being sent off by Jamie sending young Ian off with Roger.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there wondering, where is he?
And on the page, sometimes that works. You know, I mean, when you see things, we always say that post is the final. That's the final place you write the script.
Yeah, it's a final rewrite. Yep.
Yeah. I know we talked a lot about how to portray the Mohawk. We talked to consultants. Mm-hmm. We asked, you know, how they would, you know, would they do this?
Yeah.
And are the experts that we spoke with, our Mohawk experts, were like, the Mohawks were, they traded in slaves.
Yep.
And so we said, okay, we can do it then, because we wanted to make sure 100% this happened.
Yes.
You know, we know that it was in the books, but we wanted to be sensitive to, you know, the Mohawk culture.
Oh, absolutely.
And check with them.
Yep.
So I love these scenes. We have some amazing untouched tracks in Scotland that resemble North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit. These are
now the our actors who are playing the Mohawk, none of them were Mohawk. None of them knew the Mohawk language, and right. So this is a huge, long speech. We don't even include all of it in the episode, but right. it's a creation story of the Mohawk people, and this actor had to learn all of this purely phonetically.
Yeah.
He had to understand the meaning, but as far as the language goes, he learned it phonetically with our dialect coach.
Yeah,
and man. That must have been a lot of work.
Well, it is tough. You think, oh, well, you're... And some of these actors are First Nation from
yes.
Canada, and some of them are American Indians. And just because you're, you know, First Nation or American Indian doesn't mean you can speak every language.
Right.
You know, there's thousands
They're
of
remarkably
those languages.
Different, yeah.
So, and they don't... There's no crossover. There's no resemblance.
Right.
You know, a Navajo... Right. And Cherokee are completely different
yeah.
languages,
yeah.
So it was really tough for him.
Yep.
I think makeup did a fantastic job with Richard's makeup. We went through meeting after meeting after meeting we basically looked at face pieces.
Right.
To see, you know, we were in all these. But Luke and I spent a lot of time in meetings talking about how how he would look.
And how it would progress as
how
well, because
progress.
Time passes in the episode.
Yeah. And we needed the makeup to convey that to the audience.
Yes.
Hey, look, clearly, because you saw what Jamie did to Roger. We saw
right.
that the beating, and we knew what his face would
yeah.
look like. So,
yeah.
Clearly, they've been on the road, and he says here like 16 days.
Yeah, because he's tying knots in his string to
right,
keep track.
Which I
yeah.
love. It's another way of keeping track. But Roger, you know, the historian, the academic is going to figure it out.
Yeah. I love that moment. I'm not entirely convinced of it, but I think Richard actually laughed in the moment due to what the character Caleb is saying, and then turned it into this really, really real moment where it's
so. So wait, you're saying
Richard
Rankin
falls.
Was not acting? That was just laughing.
I'm saying he was acting so well that he turned that into a moment that is just beautiful.
I could
be wrong. Maybe he didn't really. The actor didn't crack up, but I wonder.
I really like that moment.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
It's a cool moment. Yeah.
It's a moment of this gallows humor.
Yeah.
You can't help laughing at your situation, and then it turns to dread again. You
yeah.
know?
I mean, they literally laugh at the absurd. He, more than that's Caleb.
Yeah.
That he laughs at the absurdity of a situation. It was, you know, a month or 2 months ago, he was sitting in Oxford teaching a course,
yeah.
and now he's in a tree... You know, I mean, tied to a tree as a prisoner of the Mohawk.
Right.
Yeah.
The irony.
Yeah.
It's crazy. This, I think, was a really nice scene as well.
Yeah.
The way these two played it.
Well, you know, this is always a, you know, bringing this up. You can imagine how heart-wrenching this is for both
yeah.
mother and daughter.
Yeah.
You know, no one wants to have this kind of conversation ever.
Oh, yeah.
But for us, you know, and you know, books and us, you know, it makes great drama.
Yeah.
So.
It's the conflict. It's not even the conflict. It's just the the struggle of what they're going through, the enormity of this situation.
And I like that beat right there, how it's personalized. What would you, you know, about you?
Yeah.
And Claire throws it right back. Whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
This is a totally different situation. Right. Let's not, this is, we're talking not even apples and oranges. We're talking, you know, broccoli and apple. You know, it's like completely different.
Yeah.
And for those of you, I do like broccoli. I'm not saying it's a broccoli thing.
I like this turn here that Claire realizes. It's the idea that that you can take a baby through when you're pregnant, but we don't know if you can take a baby through in your arms. And so this is a decision that has to be made now.
And I like that. I mean, we, for those people who have read the books, they have a lot of information that people that, that haven't read the books. So there's a lot of things that we have to voice in the show so people can understand, especially when you come into it. You may come into this in season four and you're watching, this is your, you know, 10th episode, and you don't know, you haven't binged the other seasons. So you kind of have to fill in the gaps here and there every now, for the newer viewers. But, you know, and our, the book readers who have all this information, they just, they can fill it all in. I think, you know, when people ask me, you know, you can speak to this too, Luke, is that, you know, writing on a show that you have no book is in a way totally different, because you don't have that. You just keep going, you make it up as you go along, and that's what it is. And with the books, you know people have read, and they can fill in some of the gaps.
Yes.
So you can make, you could take some short, you know, you can get from point A to point D sometimes, and you can't do that on other series. You have to go literally through all the steps. Sometimes you literally have to tell the audience, this is what we're doing.
No, but you can leave, I suppose you can. You can leave more up to the audience to fill in those blanks here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this part.
Yeah.
To me, really. That's one of my favorite lines. It's not encouraged. To put it lightly.
You're right. Yeah.
It's also illegal.
Right. Yeah.
In some states.
This is where the poem was.
This was where the poem was. Actually, we did film it.
We filmed it, yep.
So I don't know if it's on the deleted scenes or anything, but we did film the poem. And it's always difficult when someone recites a poem on camera. It's a weird, it's a weird kind of break from reality sometimes.
Poetry is not really a visual medium.
No.
So,
you know,
It stands out a little bit. It can be used, you know, maybe it works, but in this case...
You know where it works a lot is voiceover.
Yeah.
You know, when someone's reading it, when Jamie did the prayer, I think in episode two, you know, that's so powerful.
Great,
and it doesn't feel like it comes, you know, but if he was standing there reading it, you know, on camera, you would go, oh, okay, that might felt awkward, but in the, you know...
No, I agree.
Yeah. So this is Fraser's Ridge. It's a, you know, practical location. That cabin is inside, outside.
Yep.
We can film in and out. We also have a duplicate of that on our sets.
Right.
In case of really foul weather, there's your white sow. They haven't made that into a Christmas pork chop yet. So
the baby goat.
There's young Ian. Love John Bell. Making friends. Trading.
Yep.
We filmed this...
These film much later, wasn't
much
it?
Much later. That's why it was so green and all the ferns have been popping. So I kind of like this montage. I'm a montage guy, you know, in the room and someone brings up the word montage. I have a, you know, my ulcer kicks in.
Well, partly because it's a production thing. You can write a page of montages and it'll take you 2 days to shoot
easily.
A single page, you know.
But also, you know, I think they can get overused, but I think that was a nice one. And this is actually, this scene right here is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I love this one too.
When Claire kind of instinctively reads her daughter, and And then Bree instinctively knows what her mom's doing.
Yep.
And I like that.
And they really liked this song.
Yeah,
this scene too.
Yeah. And Carmi's is our star. Carmi Zlotnick is our. This was a kind of a shout out to. He's our stars. He's the head of stars.
Yes.
So he covers our show very carefully. You guys, a lot of you may have seen him. He was at our very first fan event. So he came out on stage and introduced Outlander. So we gave him a big shout out.
I thought that was a fun little shout out.
Yeah.
What do you think there, Claire? Brianna says you wouldn't like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Claire says, well, you never know. Maybe I would. I wonder if she would have. Probably not.
And I like this is a callback to jazz.
Yes.
Is in season one, I know there's our. No, this is my favorite right here.
You know, and this came out of us talking in the room. What are the things that you would genuinely miss? And, you know, Claire doesn't often voice the things that she misses, but Brianna would.
Yeah.
And for Claire to cue into that and bring this conversation up, make up this little game, and for them both to say, oh, just a regular toilet.
Yeah.
You know?
Just so you can, you know, it's weird. I think Claire is better suited to this time in a weird way. But you, of course, you're going to, because she knows of those things, would miss them.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like she couldn't make a hamburger.
Right.
She could.
She could.
You know, but it's different when you go to, you know, Carmi's and get it,
and,
you know, with the, you know, all that.
Yep.
So
the fries and the shake and the, you know.
We had a lot of debate about this particular scene.
Yep.
I know you and I discussed it quite a bit because it's important that it feels. I didn't want it to cheat the audience.
Right.
That was my thing, is that the audience can't feel cheated.
Didn't want it to, for us to play like it's really happening and then reveal it to be a dream. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, in my memory, you wanted us to know it's a dream.
I didn't want you to incorporate that she was having conversations with Lizzie or anything that made it feel like it was real life, and that the audience knows it's a dream as soon as you turn from Roger to Bonnet, because that's the thing that always bugs me when you feel like you're totally cheating the audience. And I think the way it was shot and the way it was portrayed was great. I think that coming across the back of her head and you go, holy crap, you know.
It should be. I mean, hopefully, because, you know, we never experience these things quite the way an audience member does because we know what's coming. But I hope that shock of revealing Bonnet as you come around the back of her head is like a real jolt to the audience.
Because, you know, one of the things the audience, and why I say it's a cheat, is because the audience we've just showed them for, you know, the first 24 minutes is Roger somewhere else.
Yeah.
So how did he get there? And and that's why if you only spend a brief... I didn't want to spend too long with Roger.
You don't want a whole conversation or a long conversation.
Right, because then you feel like, wait a minute, what? You confuse... It gets confusing.
Right.
Because
you also want to play into the way dreams really are
as
well. You know.
And that was, I think, one of my big points is I like that if it's going to be a dream, it should be a dream.
Yeah.
Because no one dreams in perfect symmetry where you're having great conversations.
Right. They're always weird.
Yeah. Caitlin, who plays Lizzie, you know, of course, she's not the exact same size and, you know, as the book descriptions, but also, you know, she's much younger in the book.
Mm-hmm.
We have some production limitations. When you cast someone who's young, you only have a few hours with them on set at any point.
Mm-hmm.
And what we always cast up, you have to cast someone older so they can work a full day.
Yep.
It's just the nature of the business. We loved her right off the bat.
She's really great.
A talented actress. And we always do that. You know, we always say, look, you know, Katrina is not the exact description of Claire in the book, But does Katrina, you know, embody Claire? Absolutely. She's become 100%. Claire. So we never let that. And even Sam isn't the exact description of Jamie. So you have to kind of let that go a little bit and just go for the best actor who can really. And I think by. Oh, this scene. Boy, this was fun.
I love this scene.
I love this scene. I was just saying, this is one of those scenes when you're rehearsing that they're so hard to work out because there's so many people in the room.
Yep.
There's so many things going on. There's so much coverage that they're always hard to.
Oh, they're really hard. Yeah. I remember, in the room, we called this the scene where all cats come out of all bags.
Yes.
All the secrets are finally out. And so there's so much in this scene where people are learning and admitting and denying and realizing and reacting to all of that.
And that's why it's so careful. And the smartest person in the thing is Murtaugh because he gets up and walks out.
It's a great comic moment, you know.
And what I love about it is when we were talking about it earlier, it was like, should he stay? Should he go? And it's like, no, Murtaugh knows these guys well enough to go, I'm out of here.
I had nothing to do with this.
I have nothing to do with this. I'm going to leave because this is all going to hit the fan.
Yep. And I love, too, that young Ian tries to get out and doesn't succeed.
Yes, you have to stay.
Yep. Yeah, there's so much that gets unpacked in this scene.
It is. It is one of those moments.
And misconceptions and all of that.
Really. Yeah. And what's really clashing here is modern times versus you know, the period.
Yep.
Everything.
Oof.
She really did hit him.
Yep.
That was not.
I remember too, we went back and forth on what should she call him?
Yeah.
Self-righteous bastard. And then in a minute she says, go to hell. Like, what would Brianna say? What would, you know, I think we tried out some other curse words there.
And, we did. And for Jamie, I think go to hell is a big thing, you know, when your daughter is telling you that.
Yep. Ooh, and that one too, you're a savage.
And also we discussed where would Claire go?
Yep.
Where does Claire go? And I know Katrina really thought that she should go to her daughter.
Yep.
And it's this, you're caught between the love of your life and your daughter, even, and it's Jamie's daughter too. And I think Jamie totally understands that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this moment too. And I love that. I don't even think we necessarily scripted that, but we rehearsed it on the day that Claire gets permission from
Brianna. Yes. Brianna, go ahead. You can do it.
This.
Yep. And then, but we're going to put the ring down on the table.
That we were going to do.
That was scripted. And then Jamie picks it up
and realizes.
Yeah.
Bonnet.
Yeah, there's just a lot of unpacking going on here. And I love John Bell in this.
Mm-hmm.
He's, for the most of this, he's kind of like sitting back, trying to avoid it.
I hope they don't ask.
Yep.
And that's actually where we used to go to Roger.
Yes.
And this, what we're now watching was a second scene. A separate scene.
Yes, so we see after the punch, we go to Roger, and then we come back to this.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, they'll see that in the script.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they will, yep. And that's one of my favorite lines. You do not get to be more angry than me.
Yeah.
This is not about you, Jamie.
What I like about Brianna in the scene is that she becomes kind of Jamie in the moment.
Yeah.
It's like she gets very like, all right, what are we going to do? We got all this other stuff goes aside. This is what we're doing. Yep.
Simple as that. Look, we'll go after him. Making the plan.
Yep. We talked about this too. I remember Katrina saying, well, no one would know what I'm talking about. And we're like, well, yes, but Bree would.
Yep.
And that's who you're talking to. You're talking to Bree when you say upstate.
And you're getting specific about
it. Yes, you're getting very specific.
Caleb is
I love that. That cutback to Caleb was great.
Yeah.
Because in a way, Caleb and Roger are resembling each other. They're both beat, and they're both their hair's dredged. And
so you think maybe for a minute, was that Roger?
Yeah. Well, just like, where's Roger?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. The costuming and the hair and makeup on the Mohawk is just so fantastic.
It's unbelievably good.
Yep. The and thankfully, you know, what's nice is that we've had feedback from the Mohawk and how pleased they were.
Yeah,
and that actually is more important than anything.
Yeah,
we did that with the Cherokee as well. We showed them photos and we showed them fully dressed, and the feedback was so positive. And I can't remember why you and David Moore, who directed this episode, decided to do this outside. It was probably against better judgment. Hey, we got this perfectly good cabin, but you know what? If it looked good, it'll look good.
It is one of those things where you maybe are led by the visual. Yeah. And I will say this, when we... You know, as you said earlier, we reordered the Roger scenes in the edit. So what used to come right before this scene was the scene of Roger and Caleb.
Yes.
Where they're outside the circle of fire, where the Mohawk are talking.
So you go night to night.
Yeah. You go fire to fire. We knew it had to be a night scene because of the way it fell in the script.
Yeah.
In this case, it wouldn't have had to have been a night scene. But as we shot it, it had to be a night scene. And we thought, well, let's go from fire to fire.
Well, look, I'm not going to deny it's very visual. I mean, it looks great.
But you're not wrong. You do wonder.
The lighting's brilliant. Yeah. But, you know, let's face it, it's cold. It's usually cold.
Yeah, you wonder why they're out here in the cold.
Yeah.
You can hardly see it, but we did put stuff out there as if maybe they had cooked something out here that you needed a bigger fire for, you know, that kind of thing.
It's kind of a barbecue situation going on. But yeah, no, sometimes we do that. You know, sometimes things look prettier in places. Yep. And so you go for the cinematic view of things. That's a nice frame right there. The two shot with the guys in the background.
Yeah. Yep. The way they're lit by the fire. We do. Yeah. Obviously, we light with lights as well, but the fire is always creating its own light in almost every scene, which is really lovely.
Yeah, this was an important. This is an important moment.
Absolutely beautiful moment.
It doesn't matter if there's the slightest chance, then. Yep. We have a lot of. We still have discussions about this scene going forward. You know, what's happening in this scene will carry on for
absolutely
a very long time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that's come up recently in conversation.
We're not going to tell you why, but those of you who have read ahead, you probably can guess. But you know what they call me? No spoiler Matt. That's what they call me.
Is that what they call you?
Well, my mom calls me that. So.
Oh, because you won't even tell her, will you?
No. Yeah. I say, hey, if you're not going to read the books, you suffer.
Right. My wife gets mad if I tell her any spoilers.
Yeah?
Yeah. She doesn't want to know anything until she watches it.
No, I'll get the email. It's like, what happens next? And I'll say, you know, Roger gets, and then I'll just cut the email off, and then I get...
That's really mean.
Yeah, I get some angry, but I think she knows me well enough to know that.
Yes, of course.
But I do like that, so my mom hasn't read the books, and what I like about it is that if I, you know, I'll say, hey, do you understand what's going on? And she does, she gets it, you know, she understands. The fact that she wants to know is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I know book readers know what's going on because they fill in all the gaps. Right. So it's that person you can kind of go to and ask.
Yeah,
about
was that,
that
clear? Did that make
yeah,
sense?
Yeah, is that clear? Yeah. And then your wife, you can probably ask the same questions. Yeah.
We do.
We do use our families for that reason.
And that's a little nod to the book.
Yeah.
Sort of a brief reference to something that.
Well, that happened way in the season one.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's scripted as well, too.
It is.
Yeah. That was scripted. They'll see that in the script.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like the Jamie. Everything going on, he still has an agenda.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, it just shows you the weight that he carries for helping that man get free. And then everything that he's done since.
Yeah.
This was a fantastic location for us. This and the next few scenes. We got so much out of it. So much of Roger's journey. It was just beautiful.
It's one of those... this is Dunkeld, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I went to North Carolina, I was looking... You know, I walked around and hiked and I saw different locations. And then... when we were location scouting in Scotland, you know, I would take different photos and I'd match them up and I'd go, wow, we have a saying, when you're in the trees, sometimes you can't tell.
Oh,
and I couldn't really say, you know, whether I was in North Carolina or I was in, when you're in the trees,
Sure.
Of course, absolutely. When you're, you know, driving on the highway on the other side of the road, you instantly know.
And this was a bit of a departure from the book. In the book, Jamie and Claire take Bree to River Run before continuing on to pursue Roger. And we decided to use Murtaugh for that purpose.
Well, we also, because we have him.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jamie wouldn't have sent Murtaugh to Wilmington to, you know, hunt down Bonnet because Murtaugh's dead.
Right.
And our Murtaugh's alive. So... that's, you know, a lot of times that's what takes the television show in slightly different directions, is that we have a character that just is not in the book.
Right. In the last.
And it does slightly take us off the main road of the books. But we try to always get back on the on-ramp, you know, and get back on the road.
Oh, so. Absolutely. And even though this is set in a different location, it's absolutely inspired by those scenes, and some of the dialogue is from those scenes.
Yes.
A moment that's about to come up where Ian proposes.
Yes, I love this.
That's from the book, but it was at River Run.
Yeah, you know? I love that moment.
Yeah,
where he
no, it wasn't at River Run. I'm sorry. It actually came earlier in the book. It came prior
yes.
to this even.
Yes,
but
it does.
Anyway, I made a mistake there, but yeah.
It's all right. We're already well down the road, so this is a year and a half ago easily, or more than that when you wrote the script.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Long time ago.
Yeah.
It's a great moment. His reaction. Yeah.
That's my favorite part. He comes up. He's like, both like, what are you doing?
So I think in the book, that moment, that proposal is what precipitates the all cats coming out of all bags.
Right.
The moment where everything is revealed. And always when you're adapting something like this, you're looking for, okay, we got to do that, but we can't do it in this scene. Yeah. I think we can do it in that scene, you know?
Well, I think the thing that, you know, we always say to the room when we start is there's a lot of great book moments. You might not be able to use them in the script you're writing, but never discard them. They're not just because they happen in book one or book two or book three doesn't mean they can't happen again. And we try to bring them in throughout. And I think that happened, you know, that reaction, fans of the books will go, oh my God, they didn't do my favorite scene. And you go, maybe we're going to do your favorite scene. You just might not get it where it happens.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we have to do to keep them, you know, our job, as I say, is to subvert expectations. That's literally what, that's page one. That's what you do. Because if everybody knows what's coming, that's not story. That's just you know what's coming.
There's no experience of watching it.
Nothing. There's you know every twist and turn. It's not fun.
Yep.
So
I love this shot.
Yeah.
Leaving in two directions.
And I think when we originally that was we really had that was earlier in the script, and then we did the there was a lot more at the end.
Yeah.
You know, because the Roger stuff got moved and.
Yep.
But that felt like such an ending, didn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
In a sense, it is. You know, it's not an ending, but it's they are leaving.
Well, I mean, not an ending to the just an episode.
It feels like it could be an ending to the episode. Yeah.
But boy, do we have a better ending.
I think so.
Yeah, I do too.
Drone shot, I think.
Slow drone, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is, once again, Dunkeld, huh?
This is Dunkeld. This is a lot of stuff was shot
here.
So this little waterfall was created for us by our special effects team. But this rock face, when we saw it, we said, we got to use this.
Yeah. I love that you had to create a waterfall in
Scotland.
There's Henry up there with a bucket of water pouring up. Henry Block, who does our special effects, is fabulous.
Yeah.
You've seen throughout the seasons him burning things, blowing things up, and you know, just
lightning strike in lightning episode 3.
I never seen a person get so excited when he sees the word fire. Yeah.
All these guys were so great.
Yeah, this was.
They looked so great.
You know, and it had to be a good balance of, you know, they weren't, you know, they were taking them not to be, they didn't want them to die.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we talked about that. They would let him drink water. They wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, or starve, you know, they're going to starve him. Right. But
they're also not going to let him sit there and relish it.
Exactly.
For too long. Yeah.
You know.
Oh,
yeah, this
looks so painful.
It did.
There's a lot of movie magic going on here.
Yeah, there is. A lot of post magic. Yep. And I remember watching the first cut of this and we were talking about how to make this, you know, with the shooting and where he lands and how to.
And would they shoot at him?
And I like that.
So we have one kind of rogue guy
and he's like, what are you doing? You know? We want him alive.
Yeah.
And then you want to create a chase that feels, you know, realistic. Like, would Roger, how could he get away? And what's nice is it's that the woods are dense enough, and you feel like you can lose a guy.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. And he gets enough of a head start.
Yeah. That head start really helps.
A little bit of slow motion there was shot in a different location.
Yeah, we did that over... I remember doing where that... Over at where the ridge is, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So nice that trees kind of all look the same.
Yeah,
sometimes.
This stuff, this slow motion. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what's great, too. You can shoot in two different locations. But that's the same forest as far as anybody's concerned.
Yeah.
You know?
Rhododendron everywhere.
Yep.
I was so happy when I went to North Carolina and there was rhododendron everywhere. I was like, yes, finally, we can show it on camera.
That's so funny.
I know.
Was it not? Was rhododendron not in Scotland in the 18th century?
No, it was introduced later, but it was...
Because it's all over now.
It's all over now, yeah. So we had to avoid it the first... two and a half seasons, and now we can show it everywhere. That's it right there.
Yep. And it grows everywhere. It's naturally occurring, but it's also what we bring in to hide something if we need to. And,
exactly.
You know, I love this little moment, too.
Yeah. It's a great cover. I have one of those war clubs hanging in my office. Every season I keep something, a prop or... And one of the war clubs is what I kept from season 4.
Yep.
It's hanging. Because I use it during meetings. I just hold it and tap it.
I mean, I've got some marks on my head.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just like, hey, so how do you feel about that, Matt? Well, here's how I feel about that. I think this is one of my favorites. Well, I love, you know, of course, River Run. I love.
Beautiful.
Trees are finally blooming.
Time of day to shoot. Wow.
We went round and round about this because this episode, you packed quite a bit into the script.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that quite often in your scripts.
Somehow, this script was only 46 pages long, and yet it was like 16 minutes too long.
Oh, yeah.
46 minutes is a low page count. 46 pages is sort of a low page count.
It really is. We shoot for about 52 to 55 pages. That's kind of our benchmark. You know, anything over 55 we know might be long. And then you came in,
under that.
And we're like, oh, great, for a Luke script. I was doing backflips. And then, you know, it's 20 minutes long. I'm like, what happened here?
How did that? I guess it's a lot of long scenes with a lot of people in them.
Well, and, that's it. Know, and then
dialogue heavy.
The journeys take time.
Sure they do.
You know, it's just weird how it happens,
yep.
You know?
Yep, it happens.
I remember... In the early days of Outlander, we wrote the first scripts we wrote were well into the 60s.
Were they? Yeah.
And we were dropping scenes left and right because we couldn't shoot them because the pace of our show is slower.
Yep.
You know, this isn't a show where people talk really fast and, you know, it's not a doctor show where it's, you know, there's no stats being thrown around. You know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, we had to drop a couple from this one.
Yep. I love this. I like how she Jocasta, she's pretty, you know, she's pretty on top.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think we had a discussion about this moment, about mm-hmm. knowing the hands, and he calls her on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that look, too.
Yeah.
It's nice to unpack this, too,
yeah.
this history that we haven't really delved into.
Yeah. And once again, this is a moment, you know, book readers have never experienced it because he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
We're kind of inventing here, but try to use the history
yep.
of the books, of the fact that Murtaugh loved Ellen, who is her sister,
yep.
Jamie's mother.
Yep.
And of course he would have been around. So, yep. you know, you try to at least use the history.
Absolutely.
Which you did a great job. More or less. I like that line. It's just like, well, there's a lot more.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't want everybody to hear it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But that was a lot.
Right.
I love River Run. Every time we go into the set, you know, Gary Steele outdid himself with River Run.
It's like this is the first time we're back at River Run since episode 402. Am I wrong about that?
You are not wrong.
Yeah.
I think
we always knew.
No. Yes.
Well, the
yes.
top of 403 as well. Yeah, top of 403.
Yeah, just at the very top, and then, but that's really a continuation of two.
Yep.
First time.
Back at Dunkeld. All these rocks with the moss, so beautiful.
Yeah, I think there's probably a little more moss in Scotland than there is in North Carolina.
Yeah, that might be the case.
So let's not point that out to the fans,
Luke.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. And
I don't know if anybody hears it, but that's not a beehive. I love this shot. You know, we start with the buzz.
Yep.
And what's really cool, this is a callback to almost a callback to the scene we shot, the way we shot it,
mm-hmm.
From episode one.
Yep.
And now you know why we showed the cairns and the monolith in episode one. Is this is that spot?
Yeah, you're talking episode one of this season.
Episode
yeah.
yes, yeah. 401.
Yeah.
And we showed you know, 4,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, that this monolith was there, and,
yep.
and now he found it. So it just didn't come out of the blue. It was
right.
our little way of saying, here it is.
I'm so glad we did. And he still has those stones that he got from Bonnet.
Yep.
But of course, the plan was for him and Bree to go through.
Yeah, Bree should be standing next to him. And I love Richard just breaking down because, I mean, what a gut-wrenching decision.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, after what he's been through, he's been beaten by, you know, some random guy. And who he probably, put two to two together, is like, that might have been
her dad.
Her dad. And, yeah, it's just so, so horrible.
Yeah.
I love the shot, too, coming in overhead. Did you guys do this with the drone or crane? It looks like a crane to me.
This exact shot was a crane. But we did have a drone shot as he comes up the hill. I'm not sure if we used a piece of it, I think. But that was a crane, you're right.
Yeah.
And here we go.
And here we go.
And you'll have to wait till next.
Anyway, that was a great episode. Well done, Luke.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining. Joining us on the podcast next week. This was 10, so next week is 411. I'm very excited to see what happens to Roger and Bree and everybody. I mean, it's a really good episode. Well done.
Thank you. I am very pleased with how that came out and happy to be here.
Yeah. Good night, everyone.
Good night.